for May 14th, 2007, it's the Lullabot Podcast!
Lullabot Podcast.
So, I was feeling,
that was special.
Because this is the 40th podcast, episode number 40. Everyone has cake and champagne and candles and those little, sparkly sparkler things.
And hearty horns.
And you can't see it, but we're all eating and doing those things. I feel like, we might be getting in a rut with the whole for something. It's the Lullabot Podcast. So I wanted to try something else, and I just decided to kind of keep going up and up. I don't know that one's going to hold, though. But because you want to do something to distinguish the podcasts from one another, right?
We can tell the whole thing in haiku.
That's a winner.
Haiku's not as much fun to speak as you'd think. It's more of a reading thing. We Matt once asked for some haikus, and I think a few people sent them in, and I read them, and they're good, but it just doesn't have the same it's not ready for audio like a limerick. Really, limericks are where it's at. Anyways, it's the 40th Lullabot Drupal Podcast, and I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with
Angie Byron,
Robert Douglas,
and also
Jeff Eaton.
Wow. And we get together more or less every week and talk about Drupal. And we've done 40 of these so far. That's impressive.
The podcast is over the hill.
It's something. I tried to look it up on Wikipedia. I couldn't figure out a good way to look up what's the precious metal for 40 things. Silver is 25, and I don't know, 40 is rust or something, I think. So
rust.
I don't know.
All of the podcast balloons are those black novelty balloons.
Yes. For the 40th podcast episode, we figured we'd do something special, and we couldn't think of anything truly special, but the best thing we came up with was to do a top 40 countdown of the top 40 Drupal projects, modules, themes and stuff, and projects, not just modules, but all projects. So,
and this isn't stuff that's currently super under development, hackery in progress stuff. These are things that you would actually be able to pick up and go do stuff with.
Oh, was that part of the criteria? Good.
Oh, no, it also had to be stuff that we actually know about, because there's some stuff that has come out very recently that we've just not tried. So that's not on the list.
I guess the disclaimer is it's a purely subjective list. And if other people have other ideas for what ought to be on the list.
Make your own list.
Yes, make your own list. Exactly.
GPL this list.
But first we should start with some announcements. Who's got announcements?
I've got an announcement. I live in Germany, and I'm very excited because a Drupal conference is finally coming to Germany. And not only is it coming to Germany, it's coming to my very virtual backyard. On August 25th and 26th of this year in St. Augustine, Germany, which is, for those of you who have never heard of it, because it's a relatively small town, it's very close to Bonn and Cologne. They are going to have a open source software conference at kind of a technical college there, and they've dedicated a whole lecture room and a hacking room to have a Drupal track. The whole conference is being sponsored by very magnanimous companies and other sources, and they're really saying, Drupal people, come on down, have some fun. So we need speakers, people who have topics to talk about and things they want to present in either German or English. And we need attendees if you want to spend some time in Germany doing Drupal by day and partying in Cologne by night, then this is the thing for you, August 25th, 26th in St. Augustine, Germany. It's on the front page of Drupal.org right now.
So that's probably a good place to find it. Is there a direct URL to this?
Drupal.org/node/141146.
Or just the homepage.
Just the homepage.
For people without a handy pen ready. You know, the Drupal.org node numbers are really getting up there, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Man, I remember when all you had to remember was 323. Those were the days. So another conference, the DrupalCon Barcelona, is coming up. That's September. And, of course, I don't have any links or any dates or anything in front of me.
It's the 19th to the 22nd, according to their page.
In Barcelona, Spain. There's a site for it, I know, that I've seen, but they're not accepting registrations yet. But keep an eye on the front page of Drupal.org because – you won't want to miss that one. These things have a tendency to fill up to capacity really quickly. I don't know what capacity is on this Barcelona one, but we definitely had a problem with that with the last conference in at Yahoo. Filled up real fast. So keep an ear to the ground about that one, and we will tell you about it on the podcast when we know more information. Summer Code is coming up.
Summer Code officially kicks off May 28th, so 2 weeks from today. And the day before that, myself and whoever else is around are going to be giving a little kind of an intro session or Q&A session on the Drupal Dojo for Google Summer of Code students. Anybody, so any questions that you guys have or any, you know, any mysterious things about CVS that are confusing, which I'm sure there are a lot, or anything like that, just come on by on May 27th. So that's a Sunday before May 28th. Obviously, it's before that. Anyway. just come over there and we'll show you a good time. You can get details about that on the Summer of Code group site, which is groups.drupal.org/SOC-2007.
So that date is sort of the date that the starting gun goes off for the people who are actually part of the Summer of Code, right? It's not the it's not like the deadline for it. The applications have already happened, all the projects have been picked.
Yes, students are just
gnawing at the bit, waiting to jump out of the starting gate to get their projects going, and that's when that starts. So
yeah. So Google did a different thing this year where they showed or they announced the accepted students way before Summer of Code started. I think we knew in March even. And the idea was to give students time to kind of get integrated with their communities and sort of get to know some of the people so that when the starting gun rang, they'd be all ready to go and no problems. And stuff,
right. Because there's just a lot of little bits and pieces sort of figuring out who to talk to and all that kind of stuff aside from just writing the code. Cool. Speaking of code, just a few days after that, right? June 1 is the date of the Drupal 6 code freeze, right?
Dun, dun, dun.
Man, get your features in before then. I had all this stuff I wanted to do, and I just get distracted with things, and those dates come up so quickly. Oh, well. I was hoping to write block cache for as a core thing.
There's still time.
I know. I don't know if I have time.
I still want to change the way nodes get rendered before the beginning of June, but I don't know if that'll happen.
Well, you just got the whole new form API in, didn't you, Jeff? You were just saying.
Heck yeah. It Karoli checks from Pound Drupal, and I sort of hunkered down about a month ago and pounded out some major refactoring for the form API. Not like huge sweeping changes from the perspective of module developers, but it's mostly just ironing out a lot of inconsistencies in the APIs, making things more consistent, streamlining a lot of the more complex, weird edge cases so that things are a little more predictable, and just factoring out a lot of old, ugly code that's been there for a couple of years. Form API has really evolved a lot, and it's been a process of the entire Drupal community sort of learning how to, you know, what the best practices are and what they could be for something like this. And it's really cool to see the API maturing like this. And the documentation for that should be going in shortly with new flowcharts for the people who want to understand what's going on under the surface and all that stuff.
Cool. Yeah, the Form API documentation has been falling a little bit behind, so it's great that there's some effort that they're going on there. Awesome.
One random cool little feature is now if you've got forms that have lots of buttons that have to do different things, you can have all of those buttons automatically trigger different validation and different submission code automatically rather than just writing a gigantic monster validate and submit handler that tries to do all of the things for all those buttons in one place.
Wouldn't this also mean that Jeff Simmons, one of the workshop attendees, asked if he could rename a button, and now you would be able to rename a button? Is that
true? Yes. In previous versions of Form API, renaming buttons could very easily break stuff if there was anything that depended on like what button got clicked. Now you can rename the button, and Form API behind the scenes handles tracking what code should get triggered when what button is clicked and stuff like that. And you don't have to sweat the details of like whether there was a typo in checking which button got clicked or somebody translated it and you forgot to use that. Or, I mean, just all kinds of stuff like that. Doesn't have to be worried about anymore.
How about text buttons? I mean, not text buttons, image buttons.
We didn't add that, but there is a bit that I have in testing that would add the ability to just set like a file path for any button, and it would render out as an image button. We'll see. It all depends on whether on how tremendously debauched Internet Explorer is in the information that it returns. Because a lot of the things that we find as real weird edge cases in Form API boil down to browser-specific behavior. That means like we can't predict what will actually happen in certain circumstances under IE, and that ends up being worse than just not supporting image buttons, we've found. So that's what's being ironed out at the moment.
Because I know a lot of themers that would like to get some image buttons going.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you want a little magnifying glass as the button next to the search and things like that. Be nice.
Cool stuff.
Yes. I spent a lot of time over the past couple of weeks working on my Zengine theme engine project. I still laugh when I say it. I find myself to be hilarious. but it all kind of started. We had I don't know, probably 4 or 5 months ago, someone had the idea to start a Zen theme task force group on groups.drupal.org. And it was a little bit slow going and stuff like that. And as a way to sort of reignite the project a bit, we had a conference call a couple of weeks ago, and, it was pretty good. There were probably about 20, 30 people that were sort of involved with that in one way or another. And, it was mostly just me talking for the whole call, but I think it explained a lot of things to people, and it was a two-way communication because people were able to ask questions and stuff through IRC, it's really kind of ignited that whole project, and I've committed the Zengine engine, and so basically. Here's the status of the whole thing. I don't know if I can do this quickly or not, but let's see. So the problem with the Zen theme is that it's a theme that's designed to be, modified, to basically, you know, to be hacked. But as soon as people start hacking it, we can't support it any longer. It's the whole reason that you don't hack Drupal core is because then you end up with a forked proprietary version of Drupal that isn't supported. So the Zengine was a way of sort of taking the underlying important stuff from the Zen theme and moving it into an engine that could then be modified and people could make themes which were essentially sub-themes. However, in Drupal 6, that stuff won't be – this engine will basically be made obsolete by Drupal 6. So at that point, then the Zengin code will move back into the Zen theme, and all the Zen – now what were now Zengin-based themes will just be sub-themes of Zen because like I said, I don't know if I could explain it quickly, because sub-themes don't necessarily, in Drupal 6, sub-themes won't need to live in the same directory as their parent. So all that code will just be in the Zen theme, and you'll have Zen based, themes. And so everything's a little bit confused now, but I have a vision, and it's moving forward, and I'm actually doing a whole redesign of the Lullabot site that will be based on the Zengin and Zen theme and stuff like that, so people will be able to see an example of that in a few weeks, hopefully a few weeks, when the new design is done. So,
is anybody else just incredibly stoked about all the crazy stuff that's going into Drupal 6?
Well, what's going on?
Well, we should save that for another podcast.
We should. Because we got 40. We know we've got 40 things to cover, and we haven't even started yet. So let's just start. So we're going to go from the bottom to the top. Casey Kasem, top 40, Billboard top 40 style. I'm not even going to attempt the voice. And is he even around anymore? Now it's somebody else doing that? I don't know. Anyways,
is it like John Tesh or something?
Is John Tesh?
I don't know.
Goodness gracious. Anyways, let's just start. Number 40 is a Robert Douglas contribution that I don't even know what it is.
Oh, no, it's not my contribution, but number 40 is the XML sitemap project, and that is a project that sends an XML file to the major search engines, or they can get it from you, such as Google and Yahoo and Microsoft, and it gives them hints about the content on your site and helps them crawl your site better and helps them, for example, Google gives you, like, sublinks in the search results, you know, like different entry pages.
Is this the same as or formerly known as the Google Sitemap project?
Correct. But now there's a sitemaps.org coalition of Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and the specification is published under a Creative Commons license, and they've all signed off on it. And the Google Sitemaps module is now the XML Sitemaps module and supports the specification and helps you with your search engine optimization.
So basically, every site needs this. If you've got a site, it can really help in your search engine optimization, SEO.
That's correct.
Number 39, the location module. Anybody want to hit it this one? I'll do it. Location module, when the location module came out about a year and a half, 2 years ago, something like that, I was so excited about it. I thought it was such a great thing. The whole being able to geo code things. Basically, you know, it's a zip code database. You put in the zip code or the latitude and longitude information where, you know, your thing that you're talking about, you can geotag things. I was really excited about it and used it on some sites, and it was a great thing. However, there's a lot of sort of newer ways of doing things now, and the location module basically just needs some love. It could also use some integration better integration with CCK, because it really ought to just be a location field for CCK. It's number 39 because it really has to be on this list. It's an important, great thing for, you know, tagging your content with a location and linking it off to Google Maps and all sorts of great stuff like that. Totally Web 2.0 stuff like that. However, it's low on the list because it just needs some love. It could really jump up into the top 20 pretty easily with a new revision. So that's number 39. Number 38, revision moderation.
Yes, this was a module that I wrote for New America Foundation. What it allows you to do is allow it so that whenever you know, a normal moderation process, you know, when you create a new node, like an image, say, goes into a moderation queue and the moderator checks it off and says, yeah, that's good to go, you're fine. But then the user can go in and edit that and make whatever changes that they want to it. And so they could replace their, you know, picture of little kitties with, like, something nasty. So what revision moderation does is it makes it so any subsequent edits to a node after it's been approved are put into a moderation queue, and the user can go back and it can and they can you know, make further edits and stuff like that. It's really powerful when it's paired with the actions and workflow module, because they can change a workflow state to say, yeah, I'm ready for someone to look at this, and then that can show up in a queue with views module or whatever and stuff like that. So it's yeah, I just wanted to put one of my modules on there since everybody else got to put one of theirs. So, there you go.
So, so does the current version of the node stay live?
Published, yep.
It stays published. See, that's very cool. And then the new, and so there's like a, it's basically a future version of the node that's in moderation until it gets pushed live. Cool.
Yep, exactly.
And of course, our moderate module didn't make it on this list, did it? But
no, I was going to talk about moderate. Revision moderation, moderate are both something I'm going to try within the next 2 weeks to get a core patch that kind of adds that in there. Because it's kind of silly that, you know, core doesn't offer moderation. Like, silly.
Well, yes, but it got just taken out for Drupal 5, so good luck with that.
Thanks. I like to take on the impossible.
Okay. But mostly it got taken out because it wasn't clear
it was
what
used
moderation
inconsistently
was.
And,
right.
Yeah,
it was, it
exactly.
was inconsistent. It wasn't clear what it was. So I think with a solid definition of what moderation is, and maybe, you know, yeah, I think it's a good thing. And there's definitely a lot of people running large community sites with lawyers involved who want some level of moderation. And they need those things. So, cool. 37, Case Tracker. I don't know much about this one. Anybody?
Case Tracker module is basically, in a real small nutshell, it's project module without all of the history and legacy of project module. It's designed sort of for project slash issue management using a Drupal site, where you don't necessarily have to have the overview of tracking like file revisions and stuff like that the way project module does, and you don't need CVS integration and stuff. The advantage is because it's much newer, it offers things like views integration, so you can build custom views for stuff like I want to see all issues that are in the pending category and are assigned to me, and you can just build a view for that rather than having to custom code all of that stuff the way project module currently works. There's also a Summer of Code student who's working on further enhancements to the Case Tracker module, so in the coming months we should see even more cool features being added to that.
Cool. Robert Douglas, you want to take number 36, the Porter Stemmer module?
Sure. The Porter Stemmer module improves your search results. So if you're using Drupal search module, then you should definitely get the Porter Stemmer module. Now, that's what it does is it takes words down to their basic forms so that it recognizes run, runs, running, ran. It improves search. One note, it's language specific, so the Porter Stemmer module is for English, but there's also a French Stemmer, a Dutch Stemmer, and I think I've seen a Chinese Stemmer. And
wow.
So, yeah, that's it.
Cool.
Improves your search results.
Yeah, improves your search results. That's the short version. Install it, makes Drupal search work better. Simple News is number 35.
I can talk a little bit about this one, I guess.
So
this is what we're using on Drupal.org to send out security mailing lists and stuff like that. So it's basically exactly what the title implies. If you need a newsletter, it's very simple. People can subscribe to it. You can write drafts. You can publish it out to everybody all at once. And then, you know, the newsletters are stored as nodes so they can be viewed on the site by everybody. So it's just a nice little simple module.
So it used to be that mass mailer was sort of the best way of integrating a newsletter kind of a thing with Drupal. Is Simple News sort of a better, newer way of doing that?
I've never used MassMailer, so I can't really say.
Well, MassMailer was big and abstracted, and it was PHP List. Basically, it integrated PHP List with Drupal, and it worked. It worked pretty well, actually. My main problem was just that that running a mailing list of a large size is a whole other beast. Trying to stay off of black lists and therefore on white lists and stuff like that is a can be basically a full time job for someone. And so oftentimes we'll try to sort of work with a mailing list company and integrate with them. And so when I used MassMailer on my first site, it came to find out that the previous people who'd built the previous sites didn't consider blacklisting at all, and we were blacklisted everywhere, and it just didn't work very well. So, mailing lists. Yes, when your next Drupal project includes a mailing list, be sure to tack another 20% onto that price, because it's a ball of something sticky. Wax? Ball of wax? Is that what it is? Sticky, sticky thing that when you put your hand in it, you can't get your hand out of it. Anyways, number 34 is Amazon Associate Tools.
That's right. If you've got an Amazon Association account and you want to earn money by sending referrals to Amazon to sell products, this is a godsend module for you. It lets you import Amazon items using their API. It also has some blocks and some views already set up to recommend products through Amazon. It also lets users on your site write ratings and reviews for Amazon products. And since it's an API as well, there are some modules that are built on top of it, such as the ASIN field and the ASIN filter modules. There's views integration. It's a good module.
Cool, yeah. If you want to make a little extra money by being an Amazon associate and selling some stuff on your site, a lot of people with blogs do that. It's a great way of getting a little support for your hard work and typing.
Or even if you just want to write product or book reviews on your blog or something like that, and you don't want to go the effort of typing in all of the product information.
Right, yeah, you can get the image right there from Amazon and stuff like that. It's great. Yeah, it makes you look a little professional. Number 33 is the custom stuff package, the Jeff Eaton custom links, custom pagers, and custom breadcrumbs, which are each actually technically a separate project, they're separate modules, but
all of them basically are there to do one thing. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in. But
please do.
Okay. With the addition of CCK.
I don't know about them.
Okay. With the addition of CCK and the ability to create custom content types in Drupal 5, the ability to just whip up new content types for whatever needs, that's huge for Drupal. The problem is a lot of the things that you could do in custom modules, like adding little links at the bottom of the node to say, now visit Bob's blog, or see other reviews by Bob, or something like that, or to add a custom breadcrumb trail to the top of the to the top of the page when you're on specific node type pages, or even adding forward and backward pagers to navigate through nodes of that type. These are all things that you can see happening in modules like blog module or forum module or book module in core Drupal. And now you can do a lot of that stuff with CCK, but you still can't customize those little surrounding bits of contextual information that custom modules do. Well, that's what these three modules do. Custom links allows you to add those little links at the bottom of a node that let you visit related information or see, or you know, link to a view that is, you know, displays this node. Custom pagers lets you create forwarded, backward, previous, next pagers, sort of like the What Forum module has at the bottom of its nodes, for any node type or any nodes that appear in any particular view. And custom breadcrumbs module lets you customize like the breadcrumb trail up at the top. So in the same way that Core's blog module lets you see, you know, there's the home page, then there's blogs, and there's, you know, Bob's blog, and then there's this post, you would be able to create rules to have any node type get a custom breadcrumb trail like that. One of the biggest advantages is that you can also have things like breadcrumb trails sync up with path auto aliases that you've constructed, so that there's a consistency between, you know, how people see things when they're navigating around your site. So basically, it lets you do all those cool custom tweaky bits with your custom CCK node types.
Awesome. Number 32 is the diff module.
Yeah, and I'll talk about this one since I was just talking about revisions a second ago. Diff module is just awesome, and revisions are actually kind of useless without it. What it does is it lets you compare, just like on like Wikipedia or something like that, take two revisions and compare them, and you can see which lines were added and which lines were deleted and stuff like that. It's just a simple little utility module, but it just makes a world of difference when you're looking at when you're dealing with revisions. So
yeah, if you're using revisions on your site, just install the diff module. You'll be happy you did. Number 31, workflow.
This is a groovy module. It lets you define different states for your content, like published or needs review or archived. You can pick whatever states you want. You name them yourself. And then it lets you make a path between those states. Like you can say, once a node's published, the only thing that it can happen to that after that is it gets archived. Or if an author has just created a node, the only thing that it can do now is it can either go into revision or it can go to editorial review. And well, anyway, it lets you define these different workflow states and a path to move through them. And at every time you change the content, the node, between one of these states, say freshly written to in review or from in review to published, then you can also define a list of actions that can happen. So, for example, if a node gets published after it's been in review, then the author can get an email or a notification of some sort that says, your content's been published on your site, congratulations, whatever. Or maybe one of the states that you have is promote to front page, and maybe anybody who writes some content that gets promoted to the front page should get some points or a cookie or something. Then you can write an action to give the points or give the cookie. And so it's a workflow engine, just like it says, and it's groovy.
Groovy.
Just like
that. I'm in a silly mood. I apologize. I'm going to take number 30 because I think this module is awesome. It's the automatic node titles, or auto node titles, or is that what the title of the module is exactly? I don't remember. But basically, there are a lot of situations where you don't really want the administrator or the users, whoever is creating the content, the node, to actually enter in the title of the node directly. An example that we had, that we used in one of our workshops, we were creating a CRM, based on Drupal, a customer or a contact relationship manager. And we wanted the title of things to be, the person's first name and last name, maybe last name, comma, first name. However, we wanted it to be first name, space, last name. However, we wanted to be able to sort by last name. So you want to be able to sort alphabetically. So it's important that the first name field and the last name field be separate, distinct fields. But it doesn't make sense to tell the user to enter your first name, enter the last name, now enter the first name, space, last name. You want it to be basically the title of the item to be a calculated field, where calculated isn't really the right word, concatenated of the first name field and the last name field. And this module basically suppresses the title of the node using the form API, and a great example of the form API in action. It suppresses the node title and then creates the node title based on some sort of criteria, which can be any number of different criteria. It could be the time of day, the node number. So you could have it so that, you know, that your node titles are something else. This is a great way of if you've got There was a situation, I know Moshe Weitzman wrote up a really great article. We should have mentioned this at the top of the podcast, about the New York Observer newspaper site that he helped launch just recently. If you go to the homepage of Drupal.org, there's a link right there. Great, great article about how Moshe and Barry Jaspin and someone else, I'm trying to remember who else, put together that site. Really great, great Drupal site that they did. But one of the problems that they were having was that the client wanted to be able to put HTML into the title of the node. And they ended up sort of hacking core a little bit so that this could be done. If I'd done it, I probably would have used auto node title. So if there was a field, there would be a field where HTML was allowed, but then HTML would be stripped for sort of Drupal's internal thinking of the node title. They'd probably need to be extra workarounds, but you wouldn't need to hack core. But yeah, node auto node title. Whatever the title, automatic.
You
node
know,
title.
The module with the nodes and the titles.
Yes, they just look for auto and node and title. Yeah, that's number 30. Number 29, a Kismet.
Okay, quick show of hands. Who here likes getting spam?
Woohoo!
Okay. So,
not true. There were no hands. There was yelling and hooting, but it's just because of the cake and champagne.
Okay, a Kismet module is a centralized module that you just drop in. You get an API key from the Kismet site and turn it on, and it starts to go through and automatically filter out your comments whenever people post and checks them against a central, live repository on the internet of stuff that is spammy. So in real time, it's saying, is this spam? Does this look like spam? Have a bunch of other people said this is spam, et cetera, et cetera? And it just prevents those comments from showing up on your site. You can choose to nuke them, I believe. You can choose to put them into moderation so you can go through and whitelist stuff that actually was correct. But it's a really effective solution in most cases to just making sure that spam never shows up. If you have it set up so that users can post comments or can post nodes and actual content on the site, you can also use the same engine for filtering content rather than just comments. And then you can also whitelist certain user roles so that administrators never have to go through the spam checking and they always just go through immediately. It's a really useful module. It's very handy. And it's
called a Kismet.
Yes. One thing to keep in mind is if you're building a large-scale commercial site, it does require a license to use the Kismet web service. But for bloggers and private individual sites, it's completely free.
Cool.
The Drupal module is free. It's just that using the web service that it integrates with is not free if you're one of the big guys.
Right. Number 28. Look at this. It's the Zen theme and the Zengine theme engine. We mentioned this a little bit at the beginning of the podcast, and this is one of my projects. It's also actually the first it's the first theme on the list. It might be the only theme on the list. And I feel awkward because it's my thing. It's important to us. Make your own damn list. There you go. The Zen theme attempts to be super CSS friendly, super great starting theme for building your own theme for your own site. And there you go. Anybody else have anything to say about that? I think that sort of covers it.
It's got an awesome name.
Zen, Zengine. Yeah, that's just silly. But the Zen theme was named for the CSS Zen Garden. Which is a site where people can go and create their own CSS to modify the site and basically impress other people with their awesome CSS skills. So, same idea. Number 27 is the token module, as written by Jeff Eaton. Do you want to?
Yes, token module. The quick and dirty explanation is there are all kinds of places throughout Drupal where you want to enter in a piece of text, what the title of a node should be, or with auto node titles module, when you want what you want the automatically generated title to be. If you're sending out user email, because they submitted a node, you want to be able to insert little bits of information like the title of the node they submitted or the name of the user or their email address or things like that. There's lots of places where those little information tokens need to be entered in and substituted for the correct value once it actually gets emailed out. The problem is that kind of code tends to get replicated all over the place. So everybody who's doing those kinds of tasks for a long time has been sort of reinventing that little wheel. And it means that also it's very hard to share information. Like if you just want the title of the node to go out in an email, that's fine. But if you ever wanted, say, the contents of a particular CCK field in that node to be included in the email, everybody who ever implements that kind of email sending and stuff like that would have to go in and manually add support for the CCK data structures to their module, things like that. Token module pulls all of that stuff out into a single central API module just called token. All you do is, if you have a piece of text that you want to do that kind of replacement on, you just call token replace, and it will do things like substitute out tokens like the site name, the name of the currently logged in user, what's their email address, what's the title of a given node that you passed in, things like that. Other modules handle the intelligence of what little bits of substituted text should be in there. So if you have a module that exposes data, it can tell everyone else about that via token, and it's super spiffy.
It's another Jeff Eaton API. Can't go wrong. And well, also your custom trio of modules, custom links, custom pages, custom breadcrumbs, all use it. Auto node titles has support for it now.
Path e-commerce package 3.0 and organic groups now support it as well. Oh. So that like when organic group mails go out, you can put in things like what's the name of the group that the user just joined, how many people are in that group, stuff like that. Mm. The Path Auto module has just been updated in order to support, to use token for all of its substitution and stuff like that.
And
so there's perfect consistency between Path Auto and all those other modules.
And yet token is not part of core.
Well, I think there's a stronger case to be made for it now that there's a lot of support in the contrib directory. Also, Greg Nettison, the illustrious maintainer of the Path Auto module, is the co-maintainer of Token, and both of us have been working a lot on trying to iron out this system and make sure that it's really robust, really simple to use, and very efficient for all kinds of people. And the original idea for it came when I wanted to use all the cool token handling in Path Auto in another module, and he wanted to get all that token handling out of Path Auto so he wouldn't have to maintain it as part of Path Auto. And it was one of those, hey, there's peanut butter in my chocolate. No, there's, it all worked.
Yeah. We're going to try and hurry through these. Number 26 is the 5-star module. Ratings, awesome, 5 stars, click a star, and that's awesome. It's based on Jeff Eaton's voting API, and it is sort of the standard by which all other voting API modules are held to. So 5-star module is that. 5 stars. Rate something. Rate things. Number 25, Node Profile. Robert Douglas?
Yeah, this one's meant as a replacement for the built-in profile module because that one uses serialized data and doesn't do anything really modern. So what I mean by modern is it doesn't do anything with CCK. You can't, use the content construction kit. So Node Profile makes your profiles into nodes, and you can have node profiles consisting of different content types. You can have different profiles for different user roles, and you can have different profiles even for the same user.
So we talked about this some on the Deprecated podcast, that the profile module in core is not quite as robust as it might be. There are several solutions out there. Node Profile is a great solution. BioModule, which is not on this list, is another solution for that as well. So Node Profile. Make profiles into nodes. You'll be happy you did. Number 24, the Event module. Events. This was also on the Deprecated podcast as something that is arguably deprecated. Event module is basically for managing event information. Start, stop time for things. Event module's been around a long time. There's a lot of sort of supporting stuff for it. However, I think that there are better better solutions out there. So maybe it should be lower on the list. Maybe it shouldn't be on the list. Maybe it should be higher on the list. I don't know. Event module, though, something for people to know about. It's certainly a simple way of adding event information to content as opposed to some of the more complex CCK based ways. So, oh geez. Number 23 is one of my modules. I guess I have to talk about that one too. Content templates. Contemplate module basically was a solution for originally when CCK came out, there was no way to no easy way to modify things like how the fields were displayed. If you wanted, again, like first name, last name concatenated in there or something like that, it tended to show like a title, you know, an H2 that said first name and then the first name and then an H2 that says last name and then the last name. No fun. So content templates was written for that purpose. People lots of times confuse it with theming stuff. It's really not. It's more oriented towards stuff that will happen either across themes, across the site, search-oriented ways of formatting your RSS feed or to be separate, ways of reformatting your teasers and stuff like that. Contemplate, which is short for content templates. Number 22, OpenID. Yeah.
This is a OpenID module. This is a cool module that James Walker's working on getting into core. Basically, you authenticate at one central location, then you use that same ID on every single site that you log into that supports OpenID. So no more having to remember a bunch of passwords and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. OpenID is great thing. New trend in web stuff. Seems to be a lot of support for it out there. Hopefully it'll get into Drupal core and distributed authentication stuff will be a whole lot easier and that kind of thing. Number 21 is image field. Jeffy?
Oh my goodness. Image field so rocks. Basically, it allows you to add a CCK field to any node type that just holds an image. And for those who've been around for a long time in the Drupal community, for a long time, the only way to approach this was to have a dedicated image node type. And that wasn't very flexible if you wanted to be able to, say, create a news story that had two images with it or something like that. You could use file attachments and then manually insert them into the story, but very inflexible, no fun. It was okay, but it was hard when you really needed to push it beyond where it was at. Image field is the bomb, and it integrates integrates image handling very cleanly into CCK, so you can add 1, 2, 3 a gajillion different image fields, have them save things in different directories as needed. It integrates with views, so if you're building a view, you can have the image stuff showing up, you know, in your views. It's super nice. It's awesome. Learn it, know it, love it.
Number 20 is the video module, which we use a lot on the Lullabot site. A lot of isms to the video module. I'm not crazy about the concept of it at showing the tabs to the end user and, you know, wanting to show video in a separate tab and stuff. But it's an okay solution, quick and easy way to put video stuff on your site. I'd like to see, you know, more work done towards building CCK fields for this kind of thing. But the video module, good, solid stuff, especially it's especially oriented towards hosting video off-site. You know, if you're hosting video through like Google Video or YouTube or something like that, it's a good way of kind of putting that stuff on your site. Need some love. I'd reorganize this and put it lower down on the list, but we use it. And
hey man, make your own list.
Yeah, it's fine. Well, I kind of did make this list. Number 19, code filter.
Yeah, also, according to the motto, make your own list. This might be lower down compared to some of the ones that we've already talked about, but.
Yeah, this is like a mini
It's
again,
a mini module.
Again, this list is like big, sort of, you know, important full-fledged modules as opposed to just sort of little bits and pieces. And
this is a mini module, but modules and projects got extra points in making the list when they are actually used on Drupal.org and therefore support the infrastructure of building Drupal itself. And this is one of the modules that does just that. When you have the code filter installed on your site, then you can put little PHP tags in your post and it filters the code and formats it with color highlighting, syntax highlighting, and it makes it so that PHP developers can read code on the website. And without this filter, it would be really hard to actually logically and intelligently talk about developing Drupal. So therefore, it gets a place on the list.
It's the module that develops itself.
Right.
Number 18 is the date module.
I can talk about that one, too. That one is a CCK field, which allows you to enter dates and add date fields to any content type. And once you've entered your date, then it has a lot of integration with views to let you format those dates in different ways and build views based on them. So that's the date field. It's very important.
Cool. Calendar and date field sort of go hand in hand. Date module is a field for CCK, but calendar module is not a CCK field. It's actually a views integration thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Calendar takes all of the date information that is available, including like created time of a node and the updated time or changed time of the node, as well as date fields, and lets you build calendar views based on them. So these are like either you can look at a whole year or a month or a week or even a day, and it's kind of like a visual layer to your entire website.
Cool. Number 16, I will talk about the audio module. And we did an interview with Andrew Morton, who's the current maintainer of audio module. It's great. If you're doing podcasts, use the audio module. It's just that simple. It integrates with a ID3 parser library for basically pulling all the little tags out of your MP3 files, and actually can write new tags into the file and stuff like that. It's really great stuff. Just works. It's got iTunes integration now. Audio module. Good way to go if you're doing any audio work. Done. Number 15, e-commerce. We gotta have Matt on to talk about that one. But we don't have Matt on, so who wants to talk about it?
Well, if you want to sell stuff on your site, if you want to actually have shopping carts and products and accept payments via the web, then this is the 300-pound gorilla.
And it is, in fact, 300, maybe 400 pounds.
It's 300 modules is what it is. I mean, there's like everybody and their mother has written an e-commerce module, and that means that it probably does what you want. Now, finding your way through all those 300 modules, that's where you might want to hire an e-commerce module consultant. And it's worth a footnote at this point that we did have the UberCart module on the list, but it's a very new thing, and none of us really are intimately familiar with it, so we're looking for feedback on the UberCart module as well.
So e-commerce, big and a bit confusing, powerful, but big and a bit confusing. The thing that I found attractive about UberCart as a concept is it's not big or not designed to be big or confusing. However, I haven't tested it, so. But e-commerce stuff, you've got to have it on the list because it's an important thing for people who are building these kind of websites. It's basically the stuff that really, you know, makes the difference between Drupal being a, you know, blogging kind of a tool and something that's really something more, really web application framework kind of stuff. So number 14, now we're getting into the big ones. The I-18, and one of these are, we're getting bigger as we get into the top, we're not in top 10. I-18N is the, is number 14. I, 18 letters, N. The word is internationalization. That's where the I-89. People see that. I looked at it for probably 4 or 5 months before I realized that it was a sort of a representation of the word internationalization. But anybody know about it?
I'd like to buy a vowel, please.
Robert, you live in a foreign country. What do you know about I-18N?
I live in a foreign, wild, faraway place, yes. And the I-18N module is useful if you want to have content on your site that's in different languages. Now, of course, Drupal ships with the locale module, which lets you translate the interface into different languages, so you can have all your menu items in Spanish or your links in your navigation links in Japanese, whatever. But that doesn't address the problem of if you want more than one language on your site for content. Say you want different translations of the same content, or you just have different people speaking different languages on your site and you want them to be able to post in whatever language they want to. So it basically lets you do translations of content. It doesn't do the translation, but it has a framework for supporting that.
Cool. Cool stuff. Number 13, voting API.
Voting API. Basically, there's lots of different ways that you can rate stuff and review stuff and assign values to it in a website. Voting API provides a shared standard underlying framework for all of those different things so that they can store their data, they can retrieve it, they can cache results of votes for faster retrieval and stuff like that. And it provides views integration so you can create things like pull up the top rated story nodes on my site and stuff like that. There's a lot of different modules that are based on voting API and provide different kinds of user interfaces for doing that voting, like 5 stars, dig style, click this if you like it, all kinds of things. But underneath all of those is voting API, providing the happy shared base of functionality that they can all depend on.
Cool. Number 12, actions module.
Oh, I we skipped one. Actions.
I did? 13, 12, where? What did we skip?
Oh, no. Sorry, I'm wrong. No, Jeff Eaton, continue with actions.
Oh, I love actions. Basically, there's lots of different tasks that a module can do inside of the Drupal world, like publishing nodes, sending out email to someone to give them a message, pushing something to the front page, taking it off the front page, whatever. Actions module provides a whole framework for wrapping those tiny little kinds of tasks into a single little bundle that then any other module can call by saying, like, do action publish or do action whatever. Now, just from that perspective, it's not that incredibly crazy, but that also means that you can create user interfaces that let people go in and explicitly choose what actions they want to occur when different events occur. And because this is just a nice framework and modules can expose things to it, that means that things could be triggered by events that the original designer of the module didn't even anticipate. It's just a nice plug-and-play framework for being able to generate workflows and complex processes and stuff like that. It's all kinds of spiffy.
Spiffy.
Yes.
Number 11 is the panels module. I can talk a little bit about that. I know that, has anyone messed with panels 2.0? Is that out yet or together? Anyone?
I've messed with it briefly.
Is it out? I'm going to talk about this, and I feel like I haven't messed with panels in probably 5 or 6 months, so I hope my information is not too outdated. But basically, panels allows you to create content. A content page. So it works sort of similar to views, and it in fact integrates with views. And in fact, it was written by Earl Miles, who wrote views. and so basically you can create a page, most likely your home page, where instead of having, one big block of content, the node or a listing of nodes as Drupal sort of does out of the box, instead you could have the home page be this panels panel where the content area could be a group of things. You can choose a different layout. So maybe it'd be like 3 columns, and each column would have a block in it. And so then you could have a, maybe a header thing so that would say, hey, welcome to the site and stuff, and here's the new entries in three different categories of stuff, and they could be from a view and stuff. And it's great. It's a great way of creating a very non-Drupal-y site very quickly. The downside of it is that a lot like views, you can spend a long time sort of clicking on things and moving things around to get your panels to work right and look right. And in the end, you can sometimes feel like, huh, I wonder if this would have been just faster to write from scratch. And things can get sort of confusing quickly with just all the little moving parts and stuff like that. However, as is the case with views, a little Ajax, would go a long way. And, I know that, Tal Starbo has been doing a lot of work, creating an Ajax-y kind of interface for the views user interface. And so I wonder if some of that will make its way over to panels as well, because it's good stuff. It's good stuff, and particularly if you're a little skittish about doing your own programming, panels can be a great way to get a long way without actually doing any. So there you go, panels. Number 10, organic groups.
That's right. That's the software that is responsible for running groups.drupal.org, which we reference so often on this podcast. If you want to have a website where you want the users on your website to form into groups and work together on things or discuss things that they have common interests on, and you don't know what these things are in advance, you don't know what the groups are supposed to be, they're supposed to decide that, then the Organic Groups module is for you. It lets them make the groups, and then anything that they publish into that group can be organized into that group. It's like a package, an organizer. There are also privacy permissions, so you can have all the content in your group be visible only to that group, or you can have the content be published so that it's visible site-wide. It's pretty cool, and there are a slew of add-on modules. Like basically anything in the Drupal world also integrates with organic groups, which is one of its strengths, is that it's an API and a framework that people build upon.
Yeah, I think organic groups was originally written to be sort of similar to Yahoo groups and has kind of grown and abstracted out from there. So, yeah, if you're doing group-based stuff, that's the way to go. And the example site for that, of course, groups.drupal.org, is all the special interest Drupal groups, all run by organic groups. 9 is the API module.
We've talked a lot about different modules that are the guiding code behind Drupal or the guiding code behind, groups.drupal.org. API is the guiding, it's the core behind api.drupal.org, the site where you can go and look up all kinds of information about the Drupal APIs and what the, you know, different documentation bits on all of its internal functions are. What most people don't know is that you can actually run your own local copy of api.drupal.org just by installing API module and setting it up. It lets you, it basically goes through and extracts all of the internal formatted code comments from the actual source code of Drupal and contrib modules and stuff like that that you have installed, and exposes that in that awesome browsable interface. So it's cool. It's powerful. It's spiffy.
Yeah. And it needs a little bit of love probably, but, and most people don't, they just use it through api.drupal.org, but it's good to know sort of what is the module that's powering that, and that if you wanted to spiff it up a little bit more yourself, you can do that.
As a general rule of thumb, if you're considering creating your own locally hosted documentation API repository, you have the knowledge necessary to set it up.
Yes. Number 8 is the TinyMCE module, WYSIWYG stuff. We just have one WYSIWYG on the list. That's we're gonna get in trouble for that, I'm sure. I co-wrote the original version of this module, so I guess I can mention a little bit about it. Doing WYSIWYGs for Drupal is is a multi-headed octopus, my friends. An octopus with many legs and many heads and tough to keep track of. It's a challenge because there are a whole bunch of different levels. For instance, you know, you can allow people to enter in links or, you know, embed things in with the WYSIWYG, but then Drupal at its filtering layer will filter that out. So it can be really tricky to set up your WYSIWYG to work right and stuff like that. And I know a lot of people have had a lot of frustration. There's also been talk about wanting to just sort of once and for all have a WYSIWYG at Drupal core. And that hasn't happened yet either. But I think of the WYSIWYG modules that are out there, at least in my experience, I think TinyMCE is still sort of the best and easiest to most powerful, certainly. And pretty clean, good stuff. But so if you're going to use it, and they all have their own things though. So you might try them out, but try ahead at TinyMCE first. And if that works for you, there you go. Number 7, image cache module.
Yeah. I'm not sure that really has the right name, image cache.
No,
I understand technically where the name comes from,
yeah.
But what the module does is it mainly from the user endpoint, it gives you a way to make derivatives of the main image that you upload. So let's say the image came from the image module or an image field on a CCK node. The image cache module will let you say, oh, that's great. I want this really big image to be scaled down to 300 by 300 and cropped so that it's square or something like that. And you could define as many of these derivative sizes and these derivative workflows, you know, first crop it or first scale it, then crop it, then do whatever to it. You can define as many of those as you want and then use them in places in your theming as you see fit. So it's maybe not an image cache. It says cache because it caches the derivative images, but it's more of an image derivatives module, and it's very useful if you have images on your site.
Yeah, you could call it image resize module or image crop module, and I think it would have a little more appeal, although none of those things would exactly say what it does. But image cache, it's called it cache because what it does is it takes the derivative version of these images and caches them off into a directory so they don't need to be recreated again on each page load or any of that kind of stuff. And then they're just served out through Apache in a actually really ingenious method. The really great example of what can be done outside of Drupal core using just the tools provided by Drupal core. So image cache, good stuff. Number 6, Devel module.
If you are writing Drupal code, you want this module.
Yes.
You want it installed. It's it lets you do.
If you're theming, you want this module installed.
If you're doing anything really cool with Drupal, you gotta get it. It lets you do. It lets you get all kinds of information about what's going on your Drupal site, what kind of database queries are being run when pages get loaded, how long it takes to render pages, how much memory is being used when a given page renders. It lets you execute little snippets of PHP just to do quick tweaking and, you know, database updates or whatever you need to do. It lets you do things like show all the keys of form elements as they're being rendered. It's sort of it lets you automatically generate dummy content for test sites. There's all kinds of features that are there. It's basically the Swiss Army knife for Drupal development. It's awesome.
It is. It's great. And I actually I'm a co-maintainer. It's got a lot of maintainers. And I just added a bunch of code about a month ago, a whole like generate content module thing as part of it. So especially if you're doing theming work, it's great for just filling out a whole site with users and content and stuff like that in a way that if you're, you know, just sort of want a giant lorem ipsum Drupal site to test things out with. There you go. It's all part of the Devel module package.
I think actually Moshe is the maintainer of that, and he just tolerates a whole bunch of really cocky developers who think they can go in and do what they want. I'm guilty as well.
That man's a saint. Yes, Moshe also, for those of you who don't know, is the personality, the talent behind organic groups. So, number five, Path Auto.
So you can have all sorts of URLs on your site, like node 155255111. But how fun is that when you could actually have something like, you know, eat, sleep, and drink Drupal, you know, English text. So what the Path Auto does is it takes that ugly node URL and it replaces it with English text, which is not English text, but text from the content of your site, like the title of the node or rules that you set up using the token module. And this is really great for search engine optimization because all of a sudden, instead of node 555, which means nothing to Google or Yahoo or Microsoft Search, you've got a real description of what the content is about right there in the URL. And it's also easy for people to remember.
It's little templates for the URL of each content item created automatically with consistency and all that kind of stuff. Drupal's core allows you with the path module to enter in that path manually yourself. However, try and remember what the path is for each one or try and instruct your people to enter the right thing in the right place every time. Path Auto just takes care of it and it's done. Good stuff. Number four, CCK, the Content Construction Kit. We've talked about it a gazillion times in this podcast. It's basically if you want to add extra fields to anything in Drupal 5, or create your own content in Drupal 4.7, CCK is the way to do it. Easy, super easy, decent user interface, powerful, relatively database optimized, good stuff. The way moving forward, new paradigm for Drupal CCK. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Number three. Views.
Oh my goodness. Views hardly needs an introduction. It's like introducing Jesus at a church. It just you don't need to do it. If yeah. I've offended anyone, I apologize. All email can be sent to. No. Okay. So basically you can display nodes on individual pages, and you get the node page when you first hit the main page of Drupal that shows like the last 10 nodes in reverse chronological order. But you want all kinds of different lists. You want all the blog posts in chronological order, but only the ones that started in May, and you know, all kinds of crazy things like that. Or even just simple stuff like, I just want story nodes to be listed on a page, or things like that. Long ago in the dark ages of Drupal, you had to write custom code for every single thing you wanted to do like that. Views module changes everything. Views module lets you set up custom criteria, sorts, filters, optional parameters for filtering and stuff like that so that you can create your own listings of nodes and display them in almost any way that you would like to. If you are doing lists of nodes anywhere on your site, you want to use Views module. It's just, it's not even funny. You just got to use it.
And, of course, CCK and Views, it turns out, was basically the answer to all deprecated things in Drupal. We set out doing the deprecated podcast and having no idea that it was just going to be the same thing over and over and over again. But, yeah, CCK and Views, you can do a lot with them. Number two, basically all the stuff, just sort of we mangled all together here, all the stuff that runs Drupal.org. So the CVS integration project, the project module, and the project issue tracking project module.
So ever since I've come to the Drupal community, I've thought that the way Drupal does open source has a lot of stuff going for it. It's really done right. It allows a lot of participation from a very wide field of developers and designers and people who can contribute. And that's why it rocks. And it's more than a philosophy, because there has to be a technical solution to all of that. Have you ever wondered where the tar balls come from, the things you download and unpack to actually get Drupal? Have you ever wondered how all of those issues in the issue queue are managed?
Magic? That, you know, is it magic?
It's magic.
Fairies.
It's fairies. No, it's these three modules. It's the CVS integration, the project, and the project issue tracking. And recently, we have Derek Wright to thank for all of the work that's been done on that, or at least most of it. And this takes the number two place in our list because, you know, those tarballs, if nobody could download them, then nobody could install Drupal. Or, you know, if it didn't look into the CVS repository and find out what versions there were, if you couldn't give your software versions, then we'd be lost. We'd be, you know, Drupal would be nothing. So number two in the list is the stuff that makes Drupal.org go.
And number one, here's the drum roll. Number one on the list of Drupal, Number one on the top 40 list of Drupal projects, Drupal. Yes,
Drupal.
It's important to remember that Drupal is its own project, and so therefore, yeah, it's always going to take number one. It's the thing. So I don't even know what to say about it. Drupal is Drupal. It's core. It's you know, we tend to focus a lot on the add-on modules. Those are the Lego pieces. Go out and get them. But I mean, the core stuff, that's solid. I mean, all the other stuff is, you know, I did talk, this needs a little love. This needs a little bit of fixing. It doesn't quite always work quite right. That's got a difficult user interface. Drupal core is, for the most part, rock solid. And that's not something to be taken for granted. I mean, there are the basic building pieces for doing most sites are in Drupal core. Most of the API stuff that most of the modules are built on, all in Drupal core. And it's solid. We're going into code freeze for Drupal 6. On June 1st is the current scheduled date for that. And then there will be probably about, I don't know, 4 months, 5 months, maybe, of bug checking and fixing and testing and experimenting and all that kind of stuff before Drupal 6 actually gets released. And so that's Drupal core. I don't think that any of the contrib modules go through that kind of a process in the same way. I think, you know, Vue's and CCK, there's been some, you know, they seem to be treated with that level of respect. E-commerce, I know, you know, has been trying to keep to real version releases and stuff like that. But Drupal core certainly leads the way with stability and all that kind of stuff. So,
and the amount of peer review is one of the aspects you're alluding to. The number of people who actually go in and look at the code and check it for correctness and test to make sure it's doing what it's supposed to. That's it's unparalleled in the Drupal world. Of course, Drupal core, it gets the most attention.
Yeah, everybody uses it.
Yep.
So there you go. Top 40 Drupal projects. I knew it was going to take a long time, and it did. And we just keep putting out these super, super long podcasts. This one's going to be like an hour and 20 minutes long. So, sorry, folks. Do your own podcast.
Make your own damn list.
Make your own damn list. So, yes, we encourage people to discuss these things. Go to the podcast page for this and post your comments, thoughts, observations, criticisms, cut downs, general digs, insults, and you know, good
praise
things. And
good praise.
please all those other things. No praise, yes, that would be lovely.
We also accept cookies.
Right, yes, and baked goods, cake and champagne. There you go, 40 podcasts. That's what I have to say about that. Thanks everyone for thanks Robert and Jeff.
Angie.
Angie. We want to thank Angie too. Angie dropped off. She had a previous engagement she had to run off to, but thanks for sticking with us, and we'll see you next time on what will inevitably be a shorter podcast if all goes well. I keep saying that. We'll see. All right.
Bye.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.